This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming to movies, TV shows, and pop culture to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you by WGNRadio.com with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Mason Payne here, live from the MVP studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. In China, they use a system called Face++ to monitor their citizens. Your face can be recognized anywhere. In addition to this, they will soon have software installed in their cars that will double as a voice assistant, and it'll monitor your habits. Cybersecurity expert and advisor J. Eduardo Campos explains how privacy will be shaped in America. Thanks for joining me, Eduardo.
Sure. It's my pleasure. It's an honor. Your show is, I was going through the website and so on, and listening to all the interviews. It's really cool.
Oh, thank you. So tell me, how did you get into cybersecurity?
I was in the Brazilian Army for 14 years. And when I retired, I started working with a cybersecurity company back in Brazil. And soon after that, because I had the concept of how to handle confidential information, I was a techie guy. So soon after leaving the Army, PwC, PricewaterhouseCoopers, the consulting firm, hired me. And so I worked in cybersecurity in South America, Brazil, as part of it. And then I moved to the UK and never left. I spent 25 plus years in cybersecurity. Came to Microsoft, hired by Microsoft in 2004. Came to be the chief security advisor for Latin America. So I was always involved with that. The thing that is, I always had a different approach is that I always develop all security strategies with people in the center. So instead of making something very complicated nobody understands, I always made a point making people understand what they were being asked to do. And it's quite related to what we are talking today, because we are surveilling people, we are asking people to accept controls, but we are not explaining why. We are not giving them the opportunity to understand the balance between what they are giving up and what they're getting in return.
Well, that's pretty impressive, going from government to the private sector and some pretty big corporations you worked with. Have you seen like the transition from government to private sector? Was there like an easy transition? Was the technology similar?
The technology was similar because I was, in my last role in the Army, I was helping to implement new systems, applications, and security along with the implementation. And when I moved to the private sector, what was missing badly was this connection to the user, to have a user-centric approach. And that was really good. Also the concepts that I brought, the understanding of how to handle confidential information, two other additional concepts, integrity, how to ensure the integrity of information. The information was not modified, and also the information is available when it's needed. So that made a smooth transition. And also the discipline of taking my own medicine. If I'm telling people you have to use a password that is not easy to guess, I have to do the same. If I'm telling people do not leave your passwords on a post-it on your monitor, I have to do the same. I have to lead by example. So that helped a little bit with the transition.
And that's so funny because I put all my passwords on my monitor.
Well, I always tell the users, if you lock the door, then you reduce the risk. The thing is, if you have your passwords on post-its on your monitor and you work in a cubicle by the printer, and everybody that goes to grab a printout looks at your monitor, then you are in trouble.
I wanted to talk about China specifically when it comes to surveillance, because they're the ones who are leading the world in surveying their citizens. And everybody knew it. They were doing it for decades. And they were really pushing the technology before the pandemic. And it wasn't until after the pandemic we started noticing, hey, they have a lot of technology that we didn't even know, we weren't aware of. And one of them is facial recognition. So they're not only are taking your face, they're also ranging your emotion. They're trying to use your patterns, your habits, see who you're with. And that's some really high surveillance. Is that something we're going to see in the future, like for the rest of the world?
I would step back and refer to my comment on what is the benefit to the people giving up their privacy. That's the first thing that we have to think of. What we see is China using the excuse of controlling the COVID-19 outbreak to implement additional surveillance and to, for example, it's mandatory for people to have an app that traces where they are and so on. So what we need to understand is why this is being done. The supporters of what China is doing are saying, oh, but you see, because they were with the surveillance controls, they were able to really fight back the COVID outbreak, for example, in Wuhan, very quickly, and now they are back with their economy. This is one viewpoint. The other viewpoint is what you are saying. People are completely at the mercy of the state, and the issue here is that there's no way for you to fight back. If you see measures like that, apps that are tracing people that were in touch with infected citizens in Europe, for example, applications that were developed by Google and Apple, you can always have a choice to install the app or not. You can always have a choice of demanding to know where is your information going to. And you have institutional controls that protect you and your citizen rights. That's not the same in China. So that's the issue here is, in our Western democracies, we tend to tell people why they are being surveilled, why they are being giving up their privacy, and then there's pushback from the citizenry. The civil society can question the government's motives, and that doesn't happen in China. That's, I believe, the biggest issue.
It's funny because you're right. When it comes to surveilling yourself, you're willingly giving it up. And I think of Google Glasses and the most recent one, Apple Glasses. They'll sit there and let people put that on your face, and you're able to look at everybody and say, hey, you know, I'm getting information right in front of my eyes that everybody gave up willy-nilly.
And I believe that was one of the key issues of Google Glasses, for example, that it was not clear up front what you, as a citizen sitting in a restaurant, having your meal, was giving up in terms of your rights, because a neighboring table had someone using Google Glasses, and they were all the time filming you or taking pictures of you or using facial recognition. So it was never clear what kind of control you had about your privacy. That is a fundamental question for privacy experts. Europe is very strong with that. That is, the thing is not how much privacy you have, it's how much control you have about your privacy. Because if you just say, oh, no problem, but you can't say before you give up your information, before you give up the reading of your face, you can say, yes, I agree. It's this, what's happening now at airports. If you go to board, some airlines are scanning your face, facial recognition. But then, do you have an option to say, no, I don't want this? Or do you have an explanation what is going to happen with this database, with your face, with your fingerprints? Because the issue is, what are the risks database is hacked or is leaked. Because if you have a password and a username in a database and that information is leaked, you can change the username, you can change the password, but you cannot change your fingerprint. You cannot change your face. So it's more about explaining and what is the benefit you are getting for giving up your personal information.
Now, based on the trends that you've seen, do you think that public safety will eventually supersede an individual's privacy in the future?
Preparing for this interview, I was reading a few recent reports, and you have a yearly report and so on. I believe that it all depends on the situation. Let's start with one number. Number of cameras per citizen. So there's a report from IHS Markit that shows that the number of cameras in 2018 in China and the United States. In China was 4.1 cameras per person. In the U.S. was 4.6 cameras per person. Today, the last number we have is from 2015, 5 years ago. Today, the number that we have is that it went from 4.1 cameras to 6.8 cameras in China. And the excuse here is public safety. But the question that civil society has to pose is, really? What are the options? Who holds the information? What's going to be done with that information? The biggest concern in America, it's a little bit different because you have more civil liberties, you have more ways to... You do not have a history like in Europe when, during the Nazi regime, the government used the public databases on paper at that time to persecute people, to go after specific ethnicities. Everyone that was not for the Nazi regime was against it. There was no questioning. And then we had other more recent experiences in Europe where entire ethnicities were almost wiped out in recent wars. And so they are more sensitive to giving up your privacy in the name of public safety. In the U.S., I believe that because we have more controls, because we do not have a history like that, we tend to be more open to be under surveillance from cameras, from Ring doorbells than in Europe, because we can see the benefit to public safety and we do not see the government coming after every citizen because you said something against the government. So that's the reality today.
It's funny, in the city of Chicago, I believe at one point they were trying to put a camera on every street corner. And during a couple of nights ago, we had riots and they put out faces of people that they caught on their cameras. And they've so far made over 100 arrests. But, you know, we have cameras everywhere. We have cameras, the city cameras. We have the traffic light cameras. We have cameras that came from the stores themselves. We had cameras from people who were videotaping. I mean, we do have cameras everywhere in Chicago and a little bit extra. So you get used to it, you know.
It's the same as in London. I lived in London for a while. London is one of the cities in the Western societies with more cameras on the streets because of the terrorist attacks and so on. So they have a history of public safety issues that justifies having so many cameras. But even with that, the public has, through the laws that exist, are able through the civil society representatives to question how the information is being used and where the information is being stored. Because we had here in the U.S., for example, leakage of information databases from ports of entry, and we had leakages, data leakage of information from databases where we had stored fingerprints, citizen fingerprints. That happened. That might happen. So what's important is to really explain the benefits. In this case that you are mentioning, the benefits to catch people that were looting or destroying or they committing crimes, felonies. But what happens, for example, in China, where 8 out of the top 10 most surveilled cities in the world are in China. And the report that I was reading says that by 2022, China is projected to have a one camera for every 2 people. This is crazy. It means that you see your boyfriend or your friend, everybody's watching. You have no sense of privacy at all in any time.
Now, I can't remember if at the time our former Mayor Daley either went to London to look at their surveillance camera structure or if he went to China to look at their surveillance camera structure. But he went across into another country to figure it out. And, you know, my thing is that do you think that we're going to end up going into a system where it's going to be pushed towards what China has? Or as long as we have some of our civil liberties, it won't happen at all.
I tend to be an optimistic person. So I believe, based on what I read, I'm participating in several professional associations that talk about privacy. I organize monthly events here in Seattle with one of the professional associations where I serve as vice president. And I tend to believe, from what I hear, from what I read, that we are not going to reach the same level as China in terms of surveillance, but because we will always have those civil liberties that you mentioned protected by the Constitution, by the state laws, by not-for-profit organizations that are watchdogs, keeping checks and balances on everything the government does with surveillance. So we have a different approach to surveillance than China. I say that the U.S. is still the beacon of freedom and liberties for the world. So it is not going to get where China is, in my opinion.
Thanks so much, Eduardo, for joining me. I really appreciate you being here. And for those listening, where can they find more information about you?
If your listeners want to get a free chapter of my book, they can go to our website. It's www.eecampos.com. eecampos.com. They can download a chapter of my book, From Problem Solving to Solution Design, where I share several cases of cybersecurity in corporations and government, and where they can read more about the topic.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Subscribe, rate, and comment at masonverapayne.com. That's masonverapayne.com. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne. That's all one word. And don't forget to share the show with your friends.